This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Indiana General Assembly is considering two bills that would improve the safety of coal ash disposal here in Indiana. And that, of course, means Northwest Indiana as well because of the NIPSCO plants that have coal ash disposal sites. And there's going to be a focus of a policy forum coming up tomorrow, Thursday the 14th. And to talk about it, we have with us the Director of Environmental Health and Water Policy for the Hoosier Environmental Council, which is one of the sponsors, by the way, of the upcoming policy forum. Dr. Indra Frank is with us. And Dr. Frank, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Glad to be with you, Chris.
Well, take a few moments. Tell us about these two measures that lawmakers are considering. In fact, the authors of the bill are here from Northwest Indiana, Michigan City State Representative Pat Boy, and from Ogden Dunes, State Senator Karen Talion. Tell us about first the measures that they are putting up there for review this time in the legislature.
This legislation is being introduced because there's a problem with coal ash. And the problem, of course, is that when coal ash gets wet, it contaminates water with toxic heavy metals. And coal ash won't break down over time. It's a forever pollutant, so it needs a permanent and stable solution. We've seen other states going ahead with safe coal ash disposal. This legislation will require safe coal ash disposal in Indiana, like we're seeing in many other states, safe both for our water and for our communities.
When they have the opportunity to properly dispose of coal ash, what kind of benefits are we likely to see? Obviously, it's going to keep the groundwater that would be contaminated by the coal ash out of the aquifers and the like here. Is that just the start of what benefits can come out of it if it's properly handled?
Well, yeah. So there are several benefits to handling coal ash safely. First, you prevent spills and you prevent groundwater contamination. Unfortunately, recently we've seen Indiana approve utility plans to leave coal ash at sites that are contaminating groundwater and subject to flooding. So those sites are definitely not permanent or stable. So we'll get, with this legislation, we can get rid of those risks. But this legislation would also help encourage additional recycling of coal ash. Mm-hmm. This is something we've definitely seen in other states. Coal ash can be used safely for things like cement or bricks that lock away those contaminants. And also recycling reduces the cost of disposal for the coal ash.
Mm-hmm. Did Representative Boy and Senator Talion, in working with you all and as sponsors of these two bills, did they have a chance to review some of these other measures in the other states like North Carolina and Virginia and South Carolina to come up with a measure?
Yes, we did. In fact, Representative Boy and Senator Talion worked with a work group that included Hoosier Environmental Council, Just Transition NWI, and Earth Justice, as well as others. And that work group did look at legislation from North Carolina, Virginia, and Illinois. We also looked at some of the safe disposal that's happening in those other states in helping to craft this legislation.
Now, you mentioned the organizations that the Hoosier Environmental Council is working with lawmakers on this issue. We're talking about the Just Transition Northwest Indiana, as well as Earth Justice. And they are the ones that are the main sponsor, as I understand, of this online policy forum, which is coming up on Thursday the 14th at 6:30 in the evening, local time. Tell us about the forum, who all is going to be participating in it, and how folks here in Northwest Indiana who'd like to join in on the forum can do so.
Oh, yeah. So the forum is free and open to the public. We'll be talking about the problem of coal ash in Indiana and how this legislation will help solve it. We'll also be talking about ways that people can get involved to help this legislation move forward. As you mentioned, the forum will be Thursday, January 14th at 6:30 p.m. Central. And to register for it, people can either go to indianacoalash.org, so that's the website indianacoalash.org, or look for the event about coal ash on the Hoosier Environmental Council's Facebook page.
Have you got any word back from Representative Boy and Senator Talion as to when this is likely, or these two bills are likely to come up for at least introduction and in turn to be maybe set onto committee?
That's a very good question. Senator Talian's bill has been posted now on the legislative website. Representative Boy's bill has been introduced, but it's not posted yet. We're still early in the session. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen a committee hearing scheduled for either of the bills yet, but we'll be keeping a very close eye on that.
Dr. Indra Frank is the Director of Environmental Health and Water Policy for the Hoosier Environmental Council, which is also working with Just Transition Northwest Indiana and Earth Justice as sponsors of the Policy Forum, which is coming up on Thursday, tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m. our time or 7:30 Indianapolis time. And you can find out more about that by going online. And Dr. Frank, thank you very much for being with us to talk about the measures that Senator Talian and Representative Boy have introduced. Or having, hopefully, we'll get some play here in the legislature this session. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chris. It's good talking with you.
Within the next decade, 9 coal-fired power plants here in Indiana are expected to close or at least partially shut down. And even though that may mean cleaner air and cleaner water, it could also have some repercussions for the towns that host these plants. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel tells us more about how the transition away from coal and how it could play out in Michigan City.
It's not always easy to see how something like pollution can affect your health. But for Michigan City resident Don Brooks, it's pretty clear. He has COPD, which stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It makes it difficult to breathe and can be life-threatening. Brooks says he was pretty active when he was younger, but now he can get winded just going up the stairs.
There is no hurry up, you know. You get rushing, you run out of air.
People who live near things like coal plants, factories, and big cities are more likely to have heart and lung conditions like COPD. Brooks says for him, it could be other factors, like smoking. What he does know is that emissions from things like the NIPSCO coal plant impact his health right now. But residents like Brooks may breathe a little easier in 8 years. NIPSCO plans to close the Michigan City plant, remove its coal ash ponds, and get more than 60% of its energy from renewable sources. And it seems like Michigan City leaders are ready for a change, too.
How you doing? Hanging in there, doing all right.
Councilman Michael Mack represents residents in the city's West Side neighborhood. He says the plant has been an iconic part of Michigan City, but it's time to move forward.
I think everybody's ready for it. I don't think there's very many people that would be standing up for let's burn coal right now.
Unlike other towns in Indiana, the closure in Michigan City isn't going to hit quite as hard. The plant is smaller and is in a much bigger city with more industries. Some local leaders actually see the closure as an opportunity.
We have one of the best views in Lake Michigan sitting right on that area, over 50 acres. So why not take advantage of that?
That's Clarence Hulse with the Michigan City Economic Development Corporation. From where he's standing at Washington Park, the coal plant looks out of place next to the city's own small slice of the lakefront. Hulse says he could see some retail businesses or commercial offices where the plant is now.
I think it's a prime spot for people to live and work.
But activists worry that NIPSCO will still leave coal ash contamination behind, and it's possible that not everyone will benefit from this change. Ashley Williams is a co-founder of the group Just Transition Northwest Indiana. She says the people most harmed by pollution are often left out of these conversations. And that could lead to another polluter moving into the plant's place.
We want to see that really thorough open dialogue with the community, not a behind closed doors sort of backroom deal.
LaTanya Troutman is with the LaPorte County branch of the NAACP and another co-founder of the group. She says another concern is that other developments, like beachside resorts, could gentrify the area and exclude residents from the lakefront. Troutman says many people who live closest to the plant are lower-income residents and people of color.
We want the lakefront to be available to those residents, just like it's available to the residents who reside in Long Beach.
Troutman says the city needs to think about how people affected by pollution can be part of positive change going forward. Both Clarence Hulse and Michael Mack say the city has no plans to put an industrial building where the NIPSCO plant is now, and both want to keep the lakefront open to the public. Mack says we could see a struggle between private industries and community leaders in the future, but those competing interests just haven't shown up yet.
So we just have to be smart, we have to be aware, and we have to make our input known on what we want as this process continues to go forward.
Indiana is in the middle of developing a statewide energy plan. Environmental justice advocates say it's important that the people most harmed by coal pollution and its impacts on the climate get a seat at the table. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
Here's another look at the effort to get older Hoosiers vaccinated with the vaccine that has turned protect them from COVID-19. From Indiana Public Broadcasting, Sabenta Boutier has a story that she put into place about a week or two ago when the first announcement went out for more seniors to be included in the vaccination process.
Leon Olnick is a retired hospice chaplain and rabbi. Since retirement, he's offered pastoral counseling and runs a support group for people dealing with grief and anxiety during the pandemic. He says he wants more information on vaccine availability.
And at this point, with this pandemic, people need and deserve information.
He says lots of people he's spoken with feel isolated.
I've not become ill, and I feel really fortunate about that, but I've also been absolutely meticulous about everything that has been indicated by the science, such as wearing a mask. I don't have my adult kids even come in the house, which is really difficult. They live here in town, and to not see your own children is pretty challenging.
That was Indianapolis resident Beth Williams. She's 64 years old and is a kidney donor. Both Olnick and Williams say they're eager for their first COVID-19 vaccine. Penny Caudill is the Monroe County Health Administrator. Her department has received lots of calls recently from people with questions, which she says is a good thing.
It means that people are willing to take the vaccine, and that is good for us as a community. My first response would be, please be patient.
She says the Monroe County Health Department is following instructions from the state on who can be vaccinated first and when they can move on to the next steps. On Tuesday, first responders began receiving emails that they could schedule their first vaccine. In interim plans published in October, first responders were considered part of the second phase of vaccinations. But on Wednesday, State Health Commissioner Chris Box announced those plans are now outdated. Vaccine distribution will be prioritized based on age. On Friday, people over 80 can start scheduling their vaccines. After that, invitations will be open to people older than 70 and then older than 60.
By taking an age-focused approach, we can accomplish two tasks: protecting those at greatest risk for adverse consequences like death or hospitalization, and then reaching older workers who are more likely to have comorbidities when we move into those age groups in the 60s, 65, 70 range.
Indiana Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lindsay Weaver says how quickly the vaccine is expanded to these age groups will depend on if the state receives the 78,000 weekly doses expected through January and how many appointments are made. Caudill says it will take time to get through healthcare workers, first responders, long-term care facilities, and now older populations. She thinks those who fall into the 60s age groups likely won't be eligible for the vaccine in January, and they should expect an announcement later in winter about when they can get their first dose. If you are eligible now or will be on Friday, go to the website ourshot.in.gov and click on Find a Vaccine site. Dr. Weaver says that's also where you'll find updated information on groups eligible for the vaccine. Every county will have at least one vaccine clinic. Starting next week, Caudill says the Monroe County Health Department will receive 400 to 600 doses of the vaccine a week. She emphasizes the department and hospitals don't ever know for certain how many doses they'll receive or how quickly.
I totally get that people are frustrated by not having a lot of information, because we are too.
Beth Williams says knowing a vaccine is ready gives her a lift in spirit. She's been keeping a list of things she'd like to do once she and others have the vaccine, the first being to have her family over.
I'm not a big crier, but I keep telling my husband, look out, because when I get that vaccine, I'm going to cry like a baby. I'm going to be so happy. Over time, it's going to change our lives for the better. We'll still have to wear masks and be socially distanced as we are now, but at least some of that fear will be removed.
Health officials say though a vaccine is coming, people need to continue to socially distance, wear masks, and keep getting tested. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Benta Boutier.
And now, the latest. Hoosiers 70 and older can now register for appointments to receive the vaccination. That's according to the Indiana State Health Department, who made the announcement here on Wednesday. If you or a loved one falls in that age group, you can register at ourshot.in.gov. And if you're in need of assistance, you can call 211 or reach one of the Indiana Area Agencies on Aging for help. State of Indiana opened registration for Hoosiers 80 and older last Friday, and then they've expanded it and will continue to expand it to Hoosiers 60 and older in the near future. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. With the state legislature meeting again, one of the many topics that lawmakers will be discussing is redistricting. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Mitch Legan has more about what it means for Hoosier voters and the last-minute attempts at reforms.
The General Assembly is back in session, which means Julia Vaughn is back at the State House.
Usually at least 2-3 times a week. The General Assembly typically works Monday through Thursday, so it's, you know, definitely a full-time job.
Vaughn has spent more than 2 decades pushing redistricting reform for the nonprofit Common Cause Indiana. Most of the time, she's in the basement talking policy. Now, she's on the top floor, which will soon be buzzing with activity.
Just the public recognition of the importance of redistricting and how much it impacts elections, that has changed dramatically over the last 10 years.
Republicans were in control when the state completed redistricting back in 2011. By 2012, they secured a supermajority in both the House and Senate and haven't looked back since. Just ask Andy Downs, director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics.
We see that in the fact that they not only have been able to get to the supermajority, but keep it and even expand it to some degree.
Advocates like Vaughn say when Republicans run statewide, support often hovers in the mid-50s. But partisan redistricting, or gerrymandering, allows them to keep the legislature around 70% Republican and avoid any real Democratic priorities.
Indiana's probably one of the, has fewest restrictions, either culturally or legally, on what can be done when they're drawing the lines.
That's IU political science professor Gerald Wright. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 14 states give redistricting commissions primary control over drawing lines. In Indiana, the state legislature's in charge.
Given the chance to draw lines, the majority party, when they're in power, like they clearly are in Indiana, will draw the lines to their advantage.
Vaughn isn't the only one who feels partisan gerrymandering allows legislators to pick their constituents, not the other way around. So Common Cause and other voter advocacy groups are creating a multi-partisan citizens redistricting commission. It won't have any real power, but allows the public to give input and make third-party maps to compare with the legislatures.
So our idea is to make a public process for redistricting so that the districts are drawn with the public interest driving instead of partisan political interests.
Republican leadership has been hesitant to embrace the strategy, saying that a truly nonpartisan commission is next to impossible, and they're even less keen on a fully independent redistricting commission. Here's President Pro Tempore of the Senate, Rod Bray.
We're going to make sure that we have lots of public hearings and lots of public input about communities of interest that are across the state so that we are careful about where we draw our lines and not divide those communities of interest.
It's understandable that a politician doesn't want to say, well, I'm just going to give that power up and then hope it comes out okay for me. No, I'm going to stick here with my buddies. We'll draw the lines to make sure it comes out the right way.
But the Supreme Court ruled in 2019 that partisan redistricting is an issue beyond the reach of the courts. When it boils down to it, it's politics, and the states themselves would have to enact restrictions.
If it was a Democrat in charge, there might be some different maps gerrymandered for Democrats. But that doesn't make it right to do it. Just because I do something doesn't mean you should do something, especially when it's bad.
Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor plans to try once again to get a reform bill passed before redistricting occurs at the end of the session, especially since the process will likely be rushed. Census information won't be available until the end of March, just a month before the session ends.
It does not include a commission. It's too late to put that together. And now we're operating from the standpoint of we have to have at least some standards put in place for redistricting.
Restrictions would include things like keeping districts compact and not dividing cities and counties between districts. But Bray doesn't expect them to pass.
There are reasons, if we don't do our job well, that the court could throw some of those things out. So those requirements are already in place through case law, and we're certainly going to adhere to them.
If reforms aren't possible, advocates hope the Citizens Commission will provide Hoosiers with a look at how a redistricting commission could work before the legislature takes another crack in about the year 2031. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Mitch Legan.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for joining us, and we hope that you'll join us tomorrow.